Isla McKenzie is on a mission to inspire the next generation as she chases her dream of being a racing driver. Her early life is worlds away from what it looks like now. She grew up on a dairy farm on the Isle of Lewis in the Scottish Outer Hebrides, and she was driving anything she could as soon as she was old enough to reach the pedals, be it quad bikes or tractors, and she drove a car for the first time at the age of 12. Isla comes alive with speed, a description given by her mum, and a passion for motorsport was always there. Fast forward to now, and she finds herself fulfilling that passion in her role as a dyno technician for the Mercedes F1 team, the team that seven-time world champion Lewis Hamilton races for. But while the engineering side of her life is seriously impressive, her calling is to race herself, and the talent is there. She has been fast-tracked from karts to single-seaters and signed with IMC Motorsport, and in 2023, there were opportunities in the Monoposto Formula 3 Championship. Her journey has also been the subject of a BBC documentary, the episode Fast Track to Glory in the series Our Lives, which details just how determined she is to succeed. But it also shows just how seriously she takes inspiring the next generation of female racers, something that is also evident in this podcast. It's a long talked about issue, and while Isla undoubtedly wants to succeed for herself, the chance to pave the way for others adds all the extra fuel to the fire that she will ever need. Isla, a very warm welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on, as always. For context, for those listening, we're recording this just a few days into the new year. How is everything? I imagine a nice restful Christmas and New Year before 2024 kicks off with a bang.
Yeah, well, obviously, thank you so much for having me on. This is the first thing I'm doing of 2024, which is very exciting. I had a nice rest with family and went up to Scotland. We now have winter shutdown in F1, which is great. So everybody's off. You don't need to worry about it. And I came back down and started work again on the 2nd. So straight back into my own racing and F1 car build.
Yeah, absolutely. Straight back into it, like you say. And I think uniquely, as we've talked about before we started recording, there's a few kind of parallels with your world and my world, which we'll get into more as this chat goes on. For those who don't, I obviously work for F1 too. And I suppose there's a little bit of the same for you in that a lot of it is obviously counting down to those key dates in February. Yeah. And is that kind of dominating a large part of early 2024 for you?
It really is. So this will be my 7th year in Formula One. And obviously for the last kind of 7 years, I've mentally known January and February are basically a complete write-off in terms of any social life or anything like that. The racing's obviously still kind of got to be in there, but working long, long hours. And like you said, there's lots of deadlines to meet. Got to build a race car and get it out. So
yeah, no small feat by any means.
Yeah.
Obviously, without going into detail as well, because a lot of it's under wraps, competitive sport, etc. A lot of that's kind of obvious. But for people who don't know what a dyno technician is, I mentioned in the intro to this podcast that you work for Mercedes F1 team as a dyno technician. Is there a way to kind of briefly summarize what that is for people who aren't in the know?
Yeah, so without getting into details, I can definitely kind of summarize what I do. So a lot of the things you see on the car, we test in-house before they actually go out there. So my job will be looking after those components, running them on the test beds and basically kind of analyzing what's going on. So I think that it's a kind of simplified down a few reasons we test things. One's to obviously make sure it's legal, make sure everything's safe, and essentially just making sure that they're working as they were designed to work.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, of course, your own racing ambitions too, on top of all of that with Mercedes. And last year, 2023, you did have your opportunities in the Monoposto Formula 3 Championship. What does 2024 look like for you? Like I say, it's packed already, but I imagine you've still got your eye on certain opportunities here and there.
Yeah, so it's, well, last year was definitely a learning curve for me. I did karting in senior Rotax and then kind of transitioned into single seaters, which was very exciting. Had a few kind of character building moments this season. But yeah, kind of basically building on last year is what I'm hoping to do this year. I'm going to do more karting, one for fitness and two for my racecraft. So I've not chosen a series to do yet, but I'll definitely be karting. And I'm also, it's still TBC on the car front, unfortunately, but I've got two or three really good options. Two options are single seaters, and there's also kind of 24-hour and kind of endurance racing as well. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, definitely. Fingers crossed, like you say, and we'll obviously pick apart a lot of your racing career again later on in the show when we come to that. But kind of rewinding the clock all the way back, and to kind of get a sense of Isla, the person, I suppose, and the person who now does what you do. Growing up, you grew up on the Isle of Lewis, in the Outer Hebrides of Scotland. Was it something close to me again? Because my mum is from Stornoway, the main town on there. And I think you grew up on a farm just outside of the town as well. Can you kind of summarize what that island life is like a little bit? Because I suppose if you're from the mainland or you're from England or whatever, or any other part of the UK, it may be a little bit different to what some people are used to.
It's completely worlds apart from where I am down south now. I think there's a few kind of things that I say which shock people, such as I never carried a house key until I moved away to university. It's a very, very safe place. Everybody kind of knows everybody. It's a small community, and although there's not, it's not somewhere where there's lots of money and there's lots of opportunities, but it's, I feel very, very privileged to have grown up there. Everything, you've got to be hardy, basically. The winters are tough. We don't have all the facilities that the mainland has, but it's just a stunning place. It's very clean. It's all the be There's stunning beaches. It's just when every time I go home, I feel like it's fresh air, which is a kind of good way to sum it up, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And the word you mentioned there, having watched your BBC One documentary series in Our Lives, or your specific episode, you mentioned it kind of making you a hardy person. Does that kind of cross a lot of different strands, if you like, in terms of your hardiness, be it like literally with the weather, but also in terms of personality as well?
Yeah, it definitely does. I come from a long line of farmers, and was always kind of, well, not forced, but it was the done thing for all of us to muck in and all of us to help the farm. As soon as I was able to legally drive, I was doing the milk run, which is a 4 a.m. start, like delivering milk around the island. It's definitely kind of forces you to be very hardy, very resilient. It's just, well, I guess, yeah, you just don't have the same as everybody on the mainland. There's one hospital, there's I think two GPs, there's one vet, there's one secondary school. It's not a lot of choice. You basically just have to get on with it. So definitely toughened me up quite a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And I say, can vouch for that having been there. A lot of people know everybody. It's that tight community. And kind of quickly flicking the clock back forwards again to where you are now, just outside of Brackley, working for Mercedes as you do now. How does that kind of parallel with the life you used to know, kind of growing up, with the life I suppose you have now and the community that you're in now?
It's so different. And I think I studied just outside Glasgow, and that was like my first kind of culture shock. I remember seeing everything, nothing stopped on a Sunday. So on the Isle of Lewis, there's only a bit, probably you could count in one hand how many shops or restaurants are open on a Sunday. So I was very much used to that being a day of like rest and silence and everything being shut. But life is the exact same whatever day of the week it is on the mainland. So there's so many things like that which are different. And I think certainly in the industry I'm in now, I'm every day surrounded by very high achievers, very brilliantly clever people. And it's almost like, you'll know yourself, like a little F1 bubble, where there's like the real world and then there's your F1 bubble. And sometimes it does take kind of going home to kind of have a, like, I don't know, be a bit more grounded and realise how far I have come. Because it's, you can very easily kind of forget that when you're around so many high achievers.
Yeah, totally understand that. Like I say, it's nice to have that little, I suppose, that reminder of home, bringing it all back, like say, that sense of perspective. And again, I even remember stories of my mum telling me about when she was growing up on the island and just riding a bike on a Sunday for the first time. Such a big thing. Absolutely, that just didn't compute in my head versus where I grew up compared to where she grew up. But it's just little stories like that that kind of show you. And kind of going back to that documentary as well, and your mum, who features in it, saying that, I think her quote was, "You come alive with speed." Is there a sense as to, obviously that's no surprise as to where kind of the love for the racing side of things comes from, but is there a sense of where that comes from? Was that just you? Like, what was it about that that, in her words, made you come alive?
I'm still trying to figure out where it sparked from, because I've been asked so many times. And it's weird because I've got a brother and dad and grandfathers, and they none of them were really into motorsport or into kind of cars and driving. So I don't know where it came from, but I was driving from the age of probably 12 or 13 around the farm, and even with friends and crofts and stuff. And I just absolutely loved it. I loved, if I wasn't tinkering with things, I absolutely loved driving. And I think I did a little horse riding. Maybe that was me trying to kind of fill that void, because I love jumping. I love galloping the horses along the beach. But yeah, I don't know where it came from. It must just be in me somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if you can kind of summarize what that feeling was like. I don't know, it's that sense of adrenaline that has just kept you like wanting more each time.
Yeah, I think you're definitely just in your own little world, and I guess you could have had the worst day ever or have a lot on your mind, and then as soon as you're in that, it's just irrelevant. It's not even on your mind at all. So I guess it's kind of like a bit of an escape. And also, if you're competitive, you're always wanting more as well, which is probably another element of it. It's hard to kind of put into words. It'd be great if you could bottle it up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, like you said, escapism was kind of the word that came to mind when you're talking about it. And then, you know, it's so easy and I suppose nice for a lot of people to have that escapism, but for it to then become essentially your path for much of the rest of your life. When does that kind of, that point in your life come that you think, no, this is the way I want to go forward?
That's a kind of good way, I guess, to kind of answer the last question too. I think if anyone finds that kind of blissful feeling, that naturally probably is what you want to do, or like your purpose, I guess. So it, as amazing as the island is, obviously absolutely love it, it was quite old-fashioned in thinking, in terms of women doing certain things from my experience growing up. My family weren't. My grandpa and dad were always encouraging me, if I want to pick up a spanner, do it. If you want to drive things, do it, that's fine. But I kind of caved into the kind of norm, and I went off to do zoology at university in Aberdeen, just after finishing my final year at school. And I just thought, well, I have to do something. All my friends and everyone around me is going, you know, what it's like, the pressure of what to do after school. So I went off to do that. And about 2 or 3 months in, nothing felt right. I didn't feel like I really fitted in, or if it was for me. I loved cars, but I also loved animals. So I thought that was the kind of logical step. And took a lot of kind of courage and thankfully family support to say, it's absolutely fine. Just come home, reassess what you want to do and go again. And I think that was a huge turning point in kind of, this doesn't feel right. I screw it. If I'm the only girl, I don't care. I want to do engineering. So my brother had done engineering at the local college at home, and I thought, well, I'll give it a go for a year, and absolutely loved it.
How big are your family in this then? Because like, to have that influence.
Yeah.
And I suppose knowing that you've got that support.
Yeah.
That must be a big thing on kind of that journey.
It definitely was. I think there was kind of two aspects of it. One of them was we didn't have loads of money, so I did have to really thoroughly think through things, you know, if I was going to lose a year of funding, like towards my fees and stuff. So there was that. So I guess you kind of had to be a bit mature in that sense, where I didn't have them to fall back on as much in that sense, but there was just no pressure from anyone. There was no like feeling disappointed with me or anything. So that was definitely like vital, I guess, for kind of making a big move like that and trying something different. Because I know some families, I guess, wouldn't be as happy or supportive. So I'm definitely lucky that they always have been.
Absolutely. And I think I recall you saying that, you know, you're the only woman on that course a lot of the time as well.
Yeah.
So having that, when you've got the exterior factors as well, like say perspectives, whatever it might be, or the fact that you are the only female on the course.
Yeah.
Does that help, or did that help kind of drive you forwards? Or I suppose there was that innate like desire to want to do this, but it's easier said than done a lot of the time having that.
Yeah. It's really funny. I can remember my first day and thinking, oh my God, especially at that age, you kind of, nobody wants to go in and sit alone or go to lunch alone and all the rest of it. But I do remember the first day thinking, oh my God, I've not been in this situation before, because I had a group of girl friends at school. I didn't really have male friends so much, you know. I did the horse riding, and it was definitely another one of these moments where I thought, oh my God, how much do I actually want to do this? But I was very lucky again that you probably saw him in the documentary. My friend Ali was there, and we were in the same year at school. We knew each other, but we weren't really friends. But we became really close friends, and he was a big support for me through it. So yeah, it was kind of getting used to being in a male environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose kind of there's a lot of emphasis on STEM subjects now, and I suppose trying to increase the diversity of those who are in STEM subjects. And is that your, I suppose, first-hand experience of seeing that lack of diversity at the moment? And can you see ways that could help increase that diversity in the future? Or is there still, I still imagine there's a lot, long way to go before you can get to that ideal scenario in the long run?
Yeah, I think it's definitely Formula One are doing, oh God, sorry, you can see my little dog.
That's all right. A welcome additional guest.
Yeah, exactly, an additional guest. Yeah, I think I'm definitely lucky again to work in the F1 industry, because I'm seeing, this will be my seventh year, I'm seeing already a huge difference in the amount of women going into engineering and also kind of hands-on mechanical roles. And they're really pushing for it, which is so good. But I don't really have the perspective of maybe seeing some other mechanical industries or electrical industries, you know, other areas of STEM. So I think it'll probably be safe to say there's probably definitely a lot more that needs to be done, not just in motorsport. Because the course I did could have led me to civil engineering or going offshore or going, you know, anywhere in kind of mechanical or electrical engineering. So yeah, it was definitely a big kind of shock to the system. And when I was trying to kind of make my way into the industry, there wasn't really any initiatives to try and give people experience or kind of feet in the door. But even, for example, now, Mercedes, so I used to work for Mercedes HPP, High Performance Powertrains, and one of my friends works there, and yesterday had a big open day for, they're taking on 10 female engineers for a year, and they had a big open day to kind of assess them, and it's things like that that would have been like unheard of maybe 10 years ago. So it's definitely, you can see stuff happening, but more will need to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was going to say, at that age for you, did you have role models, so to speak, be it engineering role models or women in motorsport that you kind of look up to and see this as a path into that kind of area as well?
I think being on the island, it was like there were so many things I didn't even know existed. I didn't even know that you could study motorsport engineering. I don't know. Well, it's just wasn't like that information wasn't available to me, or I didn't know of it. So in terms of role models, I always loved, obviously, Susie Wolf, being Scottish, and some of the other Scottish male drivers. But in engineering, I just didn't really know anyone. So it's probably sad to say I didn't really have any idols. I kind of, looking back at my journey, I ended up kind of doing a bit of search, like following what I was enjoying and then researching it and stumbling across like opportunities that I had absolutely no idea were even there.
So a lot of it is off your own back, essentially. It's just reading and finding out as much as you can.
Yeah. I had absolutely no contacts even in England, definitely not in F1. I knew nobody that worked in Formula One. In fact, even in motorsport, I knew nobody. I met everybody through taking my own little cars to like Scottish events, or really like sending out emails to loads of garages around Glasgow when I was at university and asking if I can help spannering or go to the Scottish Rally Championship. But I had no family friends, or I didn't know anyone who knew someone in the industry. So I was basically starting completely from scratch.
Yeah. And obviously there's the racing side as well. I don't know if there was a sense in you at that time where you're kind of juggling, whether is it engineering? Is it racing that you want to go down? Yeah. Is there kind of juggling the two and how you get the best of both worlds? Because it's a lot just to do one of those, let alone the two.
Yeah, I think I was wanting to do some kind of driving. So when I was at university, I had my own little drift car and we used to all go like once every 2 or 3 weeks to drift days for fun. But I was also trying to build a rally car on the side alongside my studies at uni. And I think about the age 19, 20, I really, really, really wanted to drive. And the reality was I had absolutely... Hindsight's a great thing. If I could go back now, I would absolutely get the funding somehow and go for it. But I just did not know what I was doing. And I never had the financial backing. And I didn't really understand how to go out and get it. So I kind of realized, well, I can't afford to do that. This will just kind of fill the void and I'll pursue a career in engineering and motorsport because I need to get a job, essentially. I didn't even at the time have any idea that I would end up in F1 either. So I kind of parked the driving dream and then just went full focus on trying to end up at some kind of top level motorsport job.
It's almost, I don't know, it's like you kind of see it as just circumstance, isn't it? It's, it's, you know, and like say parking the dream because real life, I suppose, gets in the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need a job and that kind of thing. And I don't know if there's part of you whether, you know, those opportunities have come a lot earlier in life, or if you'd known about a lot of these opportunities earlier than you did. I don't know if you kind of wrestle with that a little bit. Yeah. I don't know. Obviously, you're in a great place now, in a great position now. But I can imagine it would be hard for a lot of people who might be in that position just to think, what if?
Yeah, honestly. Like if I could give anyone the advice that younger, just absolutely go for it. I see all the opportunities and initiatives now, and they're usually capped at like 25, 26 years old. And it just kicks me in the stomach every time where I think, oh my God, I would have absolutely grabbed that opportunity both hands and gone for it. And I'm too old now, but it doesn't mean I'm too old for still chasing the dream. It's just going to look a bit different to maybe what it would have done 10 years ago. But yeah, it's definitely, I tried to kind of see the positives of it because I think, well, then again, if you were given some academy up to F1 at that age, was I mentally ready for it? Was I mature enough? You know, I tried to kind of weigh up all situations or scenarios, I guess, to kind of ease the pain of the fact I didn't get racing back then.
Yeah. And like say the flip side is, you've obviously gone down the route you've gone down, still got the racing as well, but has the engineering helped make you a more rounded person and I suppose maybe a better racer as well?
Yeah, 100%. And now that I'm kind of, for example, writing sponsorship proposals, even for like this year to try and get brands behind me, I'm quite clued up on kind of female racing driver scene and just race drivers in general, who's kind of out there. And very few have actually studied engineering and done 7 years. And I don't think any of them have done 7 years in F1. So I'm definitely unique in that way, and it's definitely going to help me going forward. I can kind of now understand how cars work, and I understand how the mechanics work, so that's got to help me as a racing driver.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, your racing trajectory again in the documentary it's you know, that journey is kind of told, and then it's been rapid, I suppose, no pun intended, in the last 18 to 24 months or so. And we've kind of gone from karting to single seaters relatively quickly, signing with IMC Motorsport as well. And again, in that show, John O'Halliday, who's the team owner, said that he was seeing something special in you. That backing and those words must mean a lot to you. And I suppose, based on the answer a couple of questions ago, actually remind you it's not too late, like there are those opportunities out there for you.
I think I'm definitely, like, my friends would laugh because it's like I'm the least likely person to blow my own trumpet at all, but I'm a very logical person, and while I'm putting so much energy and my own money and time into kind of chasing this dream, I remember the first racing line I drove, I thought, screw it, I'm going to go with, I don't know if you've heard of a man called Rob Wilson. He's like the man to go to for driver coaching, and coached pretty much the majority of the F1 grid. I thought, no, I'm going to go with him, spend a huge amount of my budget and go and do my first ever day with him, which some people might think is a bit of a waste. But he taught me, well, my first ever kind of track day in a car. And at the end, I said, like, I can take it. I'm quite, you know, got a thick skin, please just tell me, am I absolutely wasting my time here? Because I would rather know now. And I would obviously definitely respect his opinion. And he said, no, you've definitely got natural talent. Like, go for it, basically. And I'm so glad I did that, because if I ever have little blips, I'm like, nope, he's seen many as a driver. And he said, there's something there. So definitely don't do it often, but if I need to, I kind of look back to some of these positive comments from people who do know their stuff, and it's just a huge help towards the self-belief and just kind of motivating me to keep going.
Yeah, and you mentioned about not being one to blow your own trumpet.
Yeah,
but I imagine there's a sense of you kind of have to a lot of the time to get notice, to get those drives. And is that one of the things as well that I think you try and, I suppose, get to grips with? It's not your natural instinct, and I suppose it's quite a culturally British thing to always play things down as much as you can for the, the risk of sounding arrogant. But a lot of the time it's you kind of got to find that belief in yourself and shout about it sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. And that's where it is helpful even just to write down, like, I would be a bit shy to say, oh no, I'm good at this. But then if I write the evidence down and say, well, I've gone from, for example, I had absolutely no media experience or talking experience or anything with cameras, and then I went and did that documentary. So I kind of, I guess, look for kind of facts to kind of back these things up, which give me the confidence to start myself, because a huge part of the racing, unfortunately, the actual driving is a very small part of it. A huge part of it is the media, the PR, the talking to people, selling yourself, showing brands what you can offer them in return, why out of all the other people you are better. So yeah, it's definitely taken a while to get used to, but I'm getting there, because my want for driving is way more than feeling uncomfortable doing that, I guess.
Yeah. And kind of going back to last year with the F3 Championship and I suppose how it panned out, particularly at the start, where you want a race, but the car's not ready. That's kind of a situation out of your control. And you mentioned right at the start of the show about learning so much from 2023 and what that entailed.
Yeah.
What are the kind of big lessons that you've taken from that, that you want to then take forward throughout this year?
Yeah. Oh, man. There was so many. I think one of the kind of big lessons has been, no matter how desperate you are to just get going, I need to really make sure that everything's the right fit for me and that it's the right way to kind of spend that money. Sometimes the cheaper option isn't always the best option. And that was a kind of big, a big lesson for me. Because then, as I found, you think it'll be seat time, but then it might not even get to be seat time. So that was a huge lesson. And I guess it's just even realizing how resilient I've become. Definitely working in F1 kind of thickened my skin up and prepared me for stuff like that. But it's a different kind of resilience when it's something you want so badly. And I think I kind of had the motions of it last year and now I've picked myself back up. So I think I've kind of definitely learned as well that I can handle probably a lot more than I thought I could.
Is that something that I suppose you've learned along this way, is, like you say, that resilience? And I suppose you can point it back to your upbringing, the hardiness of you as a person.
Yeah.
And because it would be so easy for some people just to say, why? Now, you've got a great career engineering wise, but you must really love it to keep on going as much as you are.
There was a question I had after the documentary was released for one of the newspapers, and they said, so when is enough enough? When are you just going to let it go, basically? And my gut was just like, never. Like, it's funny, my automatic instinct is just like, absolutely not. I'm just going to keep going because... I guess that's another thing I've kind of learned in the last year, is I'd much rather have a year like that than not have tried. Because I think if I'd sat last month thinking, oh, but what if it would have worked, or what if it did, or, you know, if I'd waited for all my circumstances to be perfect for that documentary, it would have never happened. So, yeah, that was another big kind of lesson, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's frequently mentioned, obviously, the funding side of things, sponsorship is a massive side of it and a massive hurdle to a lot of people wanting to get into that side of things. And can you sum up, I suppose, what that battle is like for a lot of drivers? Just to, I suppose, again, it comes down to selling yourself, but just getting those sponsorships in.
I've kind of been through the motions where for quite a while I was like, I just do not understand why it's so difficult. And I've kind of realized it's because it's barely been proven. I think that a lot of companies think that if they put their money into a female racing driver, it's a financial risk. And I think it's as simple as it's not been seen frequently enough, you know, or proven. So it's too risky. Why would they do something that's unknown to them? You know, these kind of investors and companies are all about safe options that investment will safely work. You know, there's all this evidence and I know it will. So that's kind of helped me not take it as personally, the kind of struggles I've faced trying to get funding in. And I guess it's kind of also given me the drive to think, well, I'm going to really, really, really push to get this funding in. Get out there and get racing, and hopefully as more of us do that, it won't be so hard for a woman 10 years from now.
Yeah,
because it'll be quite proven that it's just beneficial to invest in women. In my opinion, it's actually more beneficial. We get way more of a spotlight in motorsport, in my opinion, regardless of results, even in some cases. So yeah, it's just, oh god, you've got to have the drive to just keep trying and kind of facing all the rejection.
Mm-hmm. I've kind of two questions after that. The first one being, obviously we've got things like F1 Academy now, and people like Jamie Chadwick doing really, really well over in the States. Yes. Do things like that, I don't know if it's probably too early to tell in a lot of ways, but when you've got that start of increasing visibility, does that fill you with hope going forwards that
Absolutely,
there will be more opportunity?
Yes, so much. I love Jamie. When I was working at Williams, I got to meet her. I'm so happy. I'm so glad that she's got the drive, and hopefully she'll be an IndyCar very soon. That's obviously what everybody would be hoping. She's amazing. And the F1 Academy too. I was actually aiming for the W Series before it was ended because there was no age limit on that. And I actually had a call with someone about having a test there. So that's very sad. But for example, the F1 Academy, they're obviously looking for the next driver for Formula One. So there's an age limit on it, but who knows what else might come up. Maybe it is kind of road to IndyCars or endurance racing. You just never know what somebody's going to start and what initiative. So that's definitely given me a lot of hope. And even there's been a lot of kind of feeling when I've been looking for sponsors or even just seeing brand partnerships with female racing drivers in the past, where it kind of shies away from being too feminine. And one thing I've kind of seen recently with a lot of female racing drivers is there's beauty brands supporting them, and there's really feminine like car liveries. And I think that's amazing, because I would love that. And I think that's also kind of given me hope that you can still be as girly as you want to be, and like female kind of back brands are also getting involved. So yeah, definitely a lot of hope from all these kind of initiatives.
Being who you want to be ultimately, and not feel like you need to be shoehorned. The second question I was going to ask as well, touching on what you mentioned about hopefully it'll be better for female drivers in 10 years time, 15 years time, is that almost like part of the drive as well for you? Is that if you're plugging away now, yes, it might benefit you, but also it could benefit someone later down the line?
100%. I've actually been kind of getting a bit of help with my brand of, I guess, like Isla McKenzie Racing, and we're trying to figure out what is my purpose. And then I was like, well, I love, obviously there's my own racing, but ultimately in 20, 30 years, whatever, what is my goal and my purpose? And I was like, oh God, I really, it would be either getting women into racing or engineering. And then they're like, oh, you kind of need one. And then I kind of concluded it's just making, I guess, women in motorsport or anyone from an underrepresented area or group, just making that normal instead of being like, yes, you want to forge the path, but I just want it to be like normalized. So that's definitely a big kind of driving force. And I've realized recently that is what I'm very passionate about and another kind of purpose and goal of mine.
Yeah, it's a big question to ask yourself that.
I recommend it because then you kind of really, it helps motivate you along, and then it all starts kind of come together and make sense.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, does it as well, you know, whenever the racing side concludes for you and you move on to whatever chapter it is you move on to, or whether it's sticking with engineering long term, you still always have that purpose ultimately, like helping to drive you, whatever it might be?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. In terms of yourself, what is the, I don't know if it's fair to say the aim, the target, because it can sound like such a label, if you like, but I've heard you talk about like Indy, for example, IndyCar, maybe F1 development driver one day, reserve driver, something like that, as being realistic. Is that, I don't know, is it a sense of you just taking each day as it comes, with that as an aspiration, or whether it is an outright goal for you to get something like that?
So it's definitely a bit of both. I'm definitely taking each day that comes, and realistic, and whatever budget does come in, we'll just make the most of that, but always kind of in mind of what the long-term goals would be. Like, for example, if I got budget for this year, I wouldn't just stray off and do MX5s or something. I would kind of make it kind of link up to hopefully the big long-term goals. where I can. And as I'm kind of going, I'm definitely really interested in doing like historic single seaters. I really, really, really like that, really enjoy that. And definitely kind of big goals, would love to race in the US. I think there's some women doing really well in the US and actually making good careers out of it, racing full time. That is one of the reasons I'm kind of swaying to kind of Indy or kind of US series. And also obviously the kind of age thing. But I'm very much someone who's also thinking, I'm not going to just park that dream. Yes, everybody says they're looking for like 18, 20-year-olds. But just because it hasn't been done before doesn't mean I can't try and push towards that. I mean, Lewis turns, what, 39 today? And he is absolutely on it. And fit as anything, and still exceptional at driving, and Fernando Alonso. So big deal, I'm not 20 years old. I'm not even that old, I'm 29. So I'm definitely not giving up on perhaps driving newer F1 machinery in some capacity one day, whether that's as an ambassador for a team, maybe it's helping with an academy or experience days with some of these kind of cool things. I don't know, definitely not giving up on ones that people might think would never happen.
Yeah, and like you say, you keep pushing, you never know what opportunities come your way ultimately. And
exactly.
I mean, if Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso have taught us anything in these last few years, it is that age is not just a number.
Exactly.
There's a whole lot more to it. And I suppose even being around someone like that, Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes, having George Russell there, Mick Schumacher there in a reserve capacity as well, you can still, not just in the Mercedes bubble, but going to tracks, just mingling with people, you can pick up a whole load of advice along the way for you, if that's been the case.
Yeah, I think I find that one a bit tricky because you obviously want to remain professional and kind of in your role because they're at work. So that's definitely something I need to kind of work on. But where I have been able to, I have approached who I can for advice or help or trying to get opportunities. I'm a huge Lewis fan, really respect him a lot. And it is just very surreal and motivating for, I think, everyone in the team, whatever their goals are or whatever their thing is or issues they're facing. He's just very inspirational, kind of on and off the track. So yeah, definitely very, very grateful to kind of be part of the same team as someone like that. And George and Mick, they're all very good in their own right, aren't they?
Yeah. And I suppose it falls into what you said before about just this like F1 bubble and F1 community and everyone kind of, you can observe and see, regardless of what your role is, just so much brilliance around about you. And whether it is racing driver or whatever, I still think you can kind of take little bits of that into your own life and into your own work. So many transferable skills there. And speaking of communities as well, I just want to touch on you being a part of the Girls on Track UK community. Yeah. Which I think was called Dare to Be Different when you joined, before it had its name change. And I suppose what having something like that, we've talked so much about initiatives, be it in STEM subjects or anything else like that, but those types of community, and I suppose telling people and showing people you are not alone, there's a whole load of other people like you who want to do that. Was that community a big help to you, I suppose, in all those regards, but also your onwards journey as well?
It really was, especially when I then moved down south. I think I kind of first heard of and joined the group towards the end of university, and better late than ever. I mean, even to have found other women while I was studying would have been amazing. But I then found women trying to get into motorsport or already working in motorsport. And there was like community events where we could go and listen. I went to my first one and listened to Susie Wolf talk, which was amazing. And then just meeting a room after going from kind of being the only female in the room or one of two, a whole room of us to the same kind of interests and goals. It was so helpful. And that's why I'm so keen to kind of help out with any ones I'm asked to help at now. It's very surreal to have gone from being all excited going and sitting in the crowd to being excited and nervous and standing talking to everybody. It's like a complete flip. But everywhere I've worked, I've always said, yeah, absolutely happy to do anything to help, because I know firsthand just how beneficial these are and how important they are to these members.
Yeah, like I say, and it's so often said that you can't be it without seeing it, or various variations of that phrase. And like I say, I suppose that's another example for you. I don't know, that's like another driver where you can see all these people now. It's just once you want, I suppose, makes you want more.
100%. And even if my story, where sometimes they look at you like they don't believe you, and I'm like, no, I literally knew nobody in the industry. I did no work experience. I didn't do a placement year. I didn't have a family friend or anything. And look where I am. And I think it kind of comforts people that it doesn't really matter if you've got absolutely no link to motorsport at all.
You mentioned obviously Susie Wolf being kind of a role model of yours, and obviously she's doing what she's doing now with F1 Academy, kind of continuing that championing of women in motorsport. Is there a sense that you are now a role model to a lot of other women wanting to get into that position, into a similar position? Is that a little bit weird to think of yourself as a role model to others at the same time?
It is, yes.
But a proud thing as well.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes I obviously find that hard to kind of believe, but if I am, then that's amazing. I've definitely, like, sometimes I've had emails come through, like where guys have found me on social media or LinkedIn or something. And like my favorite ones is I've had a few girls who are kind of like 12 or 13 years old saying that they've always wanted to try karting, and because they've seen me or the documentary or something, they've gone to their local like indoor track and done some karting, and they've just emailed to tell me. So stuff like that definitely makes it so worthwhile as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a lot about work.
Yeah.
Do you switch off? Have you got time to switch off? I mean, that's another juggling act in itself.
I try to. I do love a good snooze. I love dog walks and stuff like that. So definitely where I do have time, I try to switch off. And for example, like shutdown, we've got our summer shutdown at work and winter shutdown. I guess that's why at the moment, having two very important things in my life, when you shut off from one, the other one's there, and you're thinking, oh, I should really get through that to-do list and do that proposal and do those emails. So it's very rare that I do shut off, actually. I think when you've got such like big goals, you always kind of feel like there's a bit of a clock ticking in the background, and you think, well, no, I could really be going through this to-do list. So it's pretty non-stop, to be honest.
It's training your mind in one way, and I suppose a lot of people have it in all walks of life. It's just telling yourself that it's okay to have time to yourself, rather than constantly being at it and almost your brain tricking you into thinking that if you're not doing X, Y, Z for an hour, you're losing that hour. Has that been quite hard to get your head around a lot of the time when, like you say, you have got so much on? And I suppose it varies week by week as well, because we all have different good days, bad days, middle days, you name it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that I do have to remind myself. And something I usually kind of will say to myself is there won't be an Isla racing or if you don't rest, if you don't look after yourself, if you don't make sure you're eating and you're sleeping. It's like getting the basics right. And that's actually part of my New Year's resolutions for this year, is the basic stuff. Just get that right and look after yourself. Because it sounds so simple, but just making sure you are sleeping, you're eating enough, regardless of how much you've got on. It's so important. And then I guess being that typical, like focusing on the goals, I'm focusing on the goals, thinking of the rest, because I think this will be beneficial if I rest for the long-term plan.
It's something that comes up so often on this show with the wide range of athletes we've talked to, and I suppose specifically with the ones who've retired. and look back. And it's so easy for people to get their identity wrapped up in whatever it was they were doing, be it the swimmer, the athlete, whatever, the runner. And I don't know if it's like for you, where you kind of, again, remind yourself, yes, a lot of the racing, the engineering is your identity, but there's still the personal side of you as well that doesn't need to be shunted to the side, if you like, in favor of everything else, and just having that balanced approach.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even catching up with friends, like I have some friends who their childhood friends or others who have absolutely no interest or knowledge in motorsport at all, and they're just obviously cherish them anyway, but people like that, it just, we don't even talk about it, you don't think about it. And I think even my mum, if I told her what I do again and again, she has absolutely no idea what I actually do. And it's so important to also kind of spend just as much time with people like that, because it forces you to just completely shut off the job and the goals and everything, and just have a laugh or chill out or whatever it is, and just not mention at all the motorsport side.
Yeah. Last few questions, and this is one I tend to chuck out because it's simple but quite difficult at the same time, in that it's surprisingly deep, in that sport, motorsport in your case, can you kind of sum up what it means to you, and I suppose how it's shaped you into the person you are today?
Oh, that is a tricky one, actually, isn't it? I've done all right winging it so far. But that's a good one. I guess what it means to me is it's kind of been a channel for passion, if you know what I mean, like what I enjoy. And well, everybody always says if you enjoy what you do, you obviously do it better. I've had plenty of jobs, some not in motorsport at all, but I love motorsport. I put my all into it, whether it's the day job or the racing. So it's definitely kind of like a channel for just putting in effort. What was the other part of the question? There was another bit.
I suppose understanding how it has shaped you into the person you are today, yeah.
I think sometimes I have actually thought of this, and there's been positives and negatives. So one of the negatives was that I was actually very, very used to being one of only females, and I was so used to being in that environment. So it kind of shaped me to be a bit, which you like wouldn't believe, like a bit wary of like being around loads of women. I just, not even wary, I was just not used to it. After doing all of university and then 7 years in F1. So I've got loads of lovely female friends now that are also in the industry, and I'm kind of getting used to being around loads of women again. But it did shape me to being a bit harder, a bit thicker skinned, when naturally I'm not. I'm actually quite empathetic and can be, you know, very sensitive in some ways. So it definitely changed my character and personality a little bit, in that sense, which can be very good, but also a little bit negative. So it's funny, as you get older as well, it's, I've been recognizing these things and kind of adjusting them accordingly.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting one, actually, because I mean, how many people, you know, you walk into a workplace for the first time and you're obviously on day one, you're not yourself because you're still trying to gauge like, what's it like? What are people like? And not wanting to be as out there before you eventually get comfortable. And I suppose there is like, a lot of people can probably relate to that. It's just, you know, the balance of being yourself versus the work you, and how do you actually like get your true self out of there, I suppose? And it requires a lot of reflection.
It really does. And I've got all these tools on the tool belt now, which is great to use in the right situations. But it's, I think one of the things I might have said in the documentary is like, when so many women ask you about what it's like in F1, and they obviously, it's like their dream, I don't always want to say it's all amazing and it's all great, because it's not fully there yet. You know, you do have to have a bit of a thick skin. And that's something that I kind of learned the hard way. rightly. But yeah, hopefully it won't be like that all the time. But I guess there's plenty, well, any competitive sport really, even you've got to have a thick skin and you've got to kind of have a bit of like something about you, don't you?
Yeah, like I say, and I mean a lot of it comes down as well to like you building your brand and things like that. And
Yeah.
I don't know if you kind of wrestle with that, wanting to be authentic, but also so much of social media is kind of the best perfect summary of whatever it might be. And there's I suppose there's that strike in the balance and how much of yourself to open up on social media and how much
Yeah.
of yourself to open up in, all those media portrayals of you, if you so to speak, and whether that's a
Yes.
challenge in itself.
I think it's definitely a challenge because I find it very, personality-wise, I find it very difficult to not be my authentic self. I'm quite bubbly and loud, and I'm quite happy and jolly to speak to anybody. And I have found that along the way, not always the best thing. Some people might like that, and some people might underestimate me because I'm very bubbly and kind of girly or whatever in certain situations. But again, kind of after the last year, and now I'm getting help with the branding, I'm learning that yes, I might not fit the bill for everything, but it's you're basically guaranteed to not succeed if you're not yourself because you can only keep that up for so long. So even though it might be a bit trickier, maybe, or I might not fit the bill for some brands I'd want, I'm going to really be consciously trying to be myself and not change that.
Yeah, and so I think a lot of people again can resonate with that, being authentically
Yeah.
yourself in whatever it is you might do. Just quickly turning on to kind of the women in motorsport side of things again, and I suppose from your perspective and what needs to change, or at least if there are any more moves that you think can be made that will help it feel more accessible, be more accessible. I know we talked about the funding as well, but also just more of an open space for people, females, girls right now, seeing that as a viable option for them in the long run, be it racing or be it in a STEM subject, for example.
I think definitely what's kind of already going on, which would be like open days that are very accessible for women to see around factories and also hear from not just a race engineer and like one or two others that are very well known job titles, but ones that you might not really realize are all in motorsport. Definitely that. And I think it's maybe a bit of a kind of selfish viewpoint because it affects me, but I also think, well, if it affects me, it must affect many others. Is also focusing on the older women in motorsport. You don't have to be a 17-year-old like karting superstar to get into motorsport, and if you've got a few kids, that's absolutely fine. I think we definitely need to have more visibility on. It's not just Formula One. There's so many other things. And even if you want to start doing like GT racing or something in your 40s or 50s or 60s, whatever, you can do that. I think one of the kind of things I've been thinking as well is like the age and fitness. So you definitely have to be very physically fit for some racing, but in others, you don't actually have to be like. Have a huge neck and be really, really fit. And I don't know if lots of people know that. So I think there's definitely things that should be done for other types of racing and ages and situations and like
Yeah.
body types, just the whole kind of spectrum.
Exactly. I say, I think so much just conversation about motorsport can feel so F1 centric a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And like I say, it's just a reminder that there are plenty of other opportunities and great opportunities out there that people can obviously watch, be a part of, you name it.
Yeah.
I say, in the short term for you, obviously, there's the start of the F1 season and all that sort of stuff. And you mentioned at the start that it's TBC on kind of what racing route you're going to go down. In the short term, what are kind of your next steps? I don't know if there's kind of a plan for you course wise, and or whether there is any date that you're going to looking at to really map out your year?
So I think we've got a big push at the moment in the Athlete Media Group to get funding in for this year. Unfortunately, still struggling on that front. But I've got like kind of plan A's, B's, C's, D's, depending on where we go. But the short term, I'm going to get back out karting. It's obviously a bit kind of grim weather and very busy this month. But I reckon I'll be back out karting from February. That's all sorted and that's fine. And car wise, even I think I'm going to be testing the Formula Ford at Anglesey in March, and then just take it from there, really. Whatever happens, I'm going to try and make sure to get out in some old single seaters. And I kind of mentally accepted that it's better to make sure I'm with the right team and the right kind of fit, even if that means missing a few rounds. To just do it right this year and then get out when I can. So yeah, I'm not sure what's going to look like, but it feels better than last year already, hopefully. So yeah.
Which, yeah, that's a good place to be. Staying optimistic is definitely the way to be. And like I say, fingers crossed, it all pans out very nicely for you as well.
Thank you
so much, Isla, for coming to the podcast. And I say delving into motorsport is not something we get to talk about too often on the show, but I think I say in your kind of dual life, if you like, those two different sides of it, I think there's a lot of girls, people in general, who can kind of draw inspiration from that as well. And you are a key part of the seeing it and being it discussion, I think, as well. And a lot of the messages that you alluded to before are key examples of that. So long may it continue. Good luck for 2024. Hope it all goes swimmingly well. And yeah, we look forward to seeing what you do in the near future.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thanks so much to Isla for taking the time to talk to us on this episode of the podcast. And also thanks to the Athlete Media Group for the help in organising this interview. Without a doubt, we can't wait to see where Isla's journey goes from here. And let's hope she can help pave the way for others in future. That's almost it for this episode, everyone. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. And you can also follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And all of our handles are at SportsBuildPod. You can also email us with any thoughts you may have at sportsbuildpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. You will catch us next week with another new episode. But for now, it's a goodbye from me.